Welcome back, listeners, to the Built on the Border podcast. It is Monday, May 11th. The sun is shining, the birds are chirping, the weather is beautiful, and the Royals are in first place in the American League Central Division. So it's a good time to be in Kansas City. It's a good time to be a Royals fan. Enjoying the good times. With me, as always, is my two co-hosts and friends, Mr. Tommy Watson and Mr. Brody Johnson. How are you guys doing?
Doing pretty good this week.
Pretty tired after last night's Royals victory.
Yeah, it was a late victory last night. The Royals outlasted the Detroit Tigers in extra innings. Mm-hmm. Won it in the 10th to take the series 2-1. So we'll just go ahead and get right into Royals talk. You know, realistically, this could have been a sweep of the Detroit Tigers if not for an error by the young Johan Pino on Friday night. But the Royals are in first place. I say it again because it sounds so good, so sweet when you say it. But the Royals are in first place with the lead over the Detroit Tigers. And gosh, it just feels so good to have that game and a half lead over Detroit. Tommy, how does it feel right now as a Royals fan?
Feels really fantastic. Actually, what I'm more impressed with is I think we won 7 games altogether last year against the Tigers, and we're winning record for sure against them this year so far. And what would that be? 4-2 against the Tigers this year?
Yep, 4-2. So, yeah, 4-2 against the Tigers this year, and the Royals now sit with 20 wins, 11 losses on the season, game and a half up against the Tigers. Only 2.5 games up on the Twins, who have been off to a really good stretch of ball games recently. They've won, I believe, 14 out of their last 15, which is a really impressive run for them. Now the Royals travel down to Texas to play the Rangers in a four-game set against the Rangers. You know, I think the Royals should win this series. Texas is slumping, as they have been for a while. They're 13-18 this year. A lot of aging talent in that ball club. Haven't really been able to string anything together. What do you want to see from the Royals in this series against the Rangers, Tommy?
You know, I'd like to see some more consistent pitching performances. We got Duffy going tonight. He pitched only a single inning last time out.
Yeah, I was at that game. It was really difficult to watch. It was a 10-3 loss against the Indians. That was painful. But who do you got going again then tomorrow night?
Tomorrow night's Volquez, who before his last start had been pitching fairly well, but he only went 3 innings. We got 4 combined innings from those two.
Well, you have to consider what happened with Volquez. He actually was pitching a really good game in that game, in the game where he was pulled in the 3rd inning. He actually had a blister on his finger that popped in the 3rd inning, which is why he had to come out. So it wasn't really a performance issue, but I agree. Not necessarily from a performance standpoint do I want to see these pitchers do well, but from an inning standpoint. We really haven't given a lot of relief to our bullpen in the last 10 games. We've got guys going, you know, long, extended stretches. In fact, they went, I think it was 18 total innings in that series, or 18 innings since the start of that series against Cleveland. So you never want your bullpen throwing that many innings, especially when you want to keep your guys like Pino, Morales, Young, Hochaver, who's now back from injury, fresh. So I agree. I would like to see some stronger pitching performances, have them go a little bit deeper in the rotation. But the offense is still performing well. You know, there are going to be days where they slump a little bit. But who from the offensive side has impressed you the most so far through the first 31 games?
Oh, it's easily Moose. Moose was a pitiful hitter last season, and he's probably, I think he's the second highest average on our team right now. So just, and the fact that he has more, or I think the same amount of opposite field hits this season as he had all of last season.
That's impressive.
Yeah.
And it's important because, you know, as people have indicated, or have said, they can't shift on him anymore. Nope. You can't shift on Moose because he can go opposite field. He's going to burn you on if you try and shift. So when he wants to go to right field, he can go to right field. If when he wants to go to left field, he can go to left field. We don't have to worry about him getting those, you know, liners up the first or that first second gap getting picked off by the second baseman playing so deep. So yeah, I'd have to agree. I love what I'm seeing from Moose so far this year. Brody, who on the offensive side of the game has impressed you the most this season?
I've really liked what I've seen from Eric Hosmer.
Absolutely.
I mean, he's really coming into his own as a 25-year-old, and just he is still getting shifted on, but his opposite field power and just to see him becoming the superstar that we have really wanted him to be for the last several years.
Yeah.
It's just great to see.
His numbers are fantastic, too. He's leading the team in RBIs with 25. He's got 5 home runs. He's got a .317 batting average. And he's leading the team in home runs, too. So that's what you want to see from your guy. And what I really like about Hosmer is he's really assumed a leadership role as well. There were guys in the clubhouse last year like James Shields, who really were kind of the glue guy, the veteran that led the team. You had Raul Ibanez, who we picked up late in the season, that kind of led the team. While there's really no true veteran presence on this team, you could look to maybe like an Alex Rios or a Kendrys Morales, guys who have been around the league a little bit longer than some of the other Royals have, and say, well, maybe they can add some of that. But Hosmer has really stepped up, being as young as he is, to come in and assume that role. And I've been just really impressed with him. The maturity that it takes for him to play as well as he is, he's 25 years old. Like Brody said, he's just playing fantastic baseball right now. And to top it all off, rumors are he's dating Kansas City TV personality Casey McDonald.
Oh, I've not heard that.
Yeah, so she's off the market. Eligible Bachelors of Kansas City, Casey McDonald and Eric Hosmer are now reportedly rumored to be dating.
I don't know if I like him as much now.
I thought
I had a chance with her.
You know, I don't think any of us had a chance. I almost like him more. You know, it shows that Eric's able to go out there and you know, attract a very nice, intelligent, pretty young woman to date him. Because, you know, who wouldn't want to date Eric Hosmer? He's probably one of the most eligible bachelors in Kansas City. I'd have to think. I mean, name one professional athlete in Kansas City who's more popular with the female population than Eric Hosmer.
Dom Dwyer married Sidney LaRue.
Well, he's not. That doesn't make him an eligible bachelor then,
that's
Tommy.
That's true.
Name one.
So he was formerly until, what, like a year ago?
Yeah, but I'm saying now, right now, name one Kansas City sports player that's a more eligible bachelor that the ladies love more than Eric Hosmer.
Do I count as an amateur?
No,
golfer?
You don't.
Okay.
So, really impressed by the Royals thus far. Hopefully they continue to win. They're currently currently down 3 runs to the Rangers as we record this podcast. Duffy off to another rough start. He's only 3 outs into the game. He's in the top of the second or bottom of the second, and they're down 3-0. So, not another great start to the game for Duffy. Shifting gears though, away from baseball. Big news today for Kansas City in general, but also possibly big news for future sporting events in Kansas City.
Mm-hmm.
They announced an 800-room Hyatt Convention Hotel to be built in downtown Kansas City. And the announcement came today by Mayor Sly James. This is big. This has major implications on the kind of market Kansas City can be. As Mayor Sly James said, you know, in his interview today, Kansas City has now kind of pulled its chair up to the table of some of the best cities in the country. You know, we already believed it. Now it's time to show the rest of the country that we are. And this gives us a chance to bring in maybe the biggest American sporting event, maybe biggest sporting event in the world, the Super Bowl. Tommy, what are your thoughts on the new Hyatt Hotel that's going to be constructed in downtown Kansas City?
I think I like it a lot because it's going to bring in a lot more things that you're not necessarily expecting. Like, everyone wants the Super Bowl. That's you know, the mother of all things you want to bring in. But I think where this is really going to show effect is it's going to upgrade us. You know, for the NCAA tournament, we've been doing, like, first and second round games. I think that upgrades us to Sweet 16, Elite 8 games.
Yeah.
And I think what they're really working for right now is they're trying, since the NFL draft for the first time, moved outside of New York City for at least since, what, 65, I think.
Yeah.
I think they're trying to make a play more at that because I don't know how much of a chance we really have at a Super Bowl. I mean, I know that they've kind of opened it up. They had that cold weather one in New York. But, I mean, I feel like Chicago would be above us in terms of getting a Super Bowl.
That's true. But, I mean, at least you have the resource there to be
a
prospect.
At least this is a start. This is
yeah,
a great
absolutely.
Move. I love it.
And, if you know, as we watch the draft become more of a rotational thing and it moves cities every year, which I actually am excited to see. I think different cities should have opportunities to bid for the draft every year.
Yeah,
I think that makes it more special. You saw what Chicago did. I mean, the whole city went all out for the draft last weekend and the whole city was a buzz for the NFL draft. So that'd be great for Kansas City to bring in. I agree with you. More later round games in the NCAA tournament. And it also just makes the Sprint Center a more viable place to host anything. I mean, we could bring the Big 12 championship, you know, football game back to Arrowhead. I know there's not a whole lot of draw because Mizzou doesn't play in Columbia anymore, but that could be something that they could bring back. You know, the Big 12 tournament is only going to be in Kansas City for one more season, so that could be another reason. You know, that construction could bring more attractiveness to a bid that Kansas City could submit to the Big 12 for the basketball tournament. So I think it's nothing but positive, and I think it was time for Kansas City to make a move like that. Brody, what are your thoughts on it?
It's just great for the city, for the growth of really revitalizing the downtown area. Yeah. As you said, Sprint Center and Power and Light were built for a huge convention hotel as is going to be built.
Yeah, I think it means just nothing but good things for Kansas City moving forward. Tommy's now slumping down in his chair because Danny Duffy has now surrendered 4 runs in the first 2 innings of work. He actually hasn't recorded out now in the second inning. So this gives a good opportunity to be up to date and current when you guys listen to the podcast tomorrow. What is going on with Danny Duffy? What is causing him to struggle so much out of the gate?
I really can't answer that. He had that two starts ago now, he had that really good outing, you know, gem of a performance. And then last week he pitched 1 inning. This week he hasn't recorded an out yet in the second inning. I actually tried to turn the game off and I flipped it to ESPN and they switched to the Royals game because they're in a rain delay with their Monday night baseball. So there's no escaping this Royals game.
Not impressive work by Duffy thus far this year. His road ERA in the past has been outstanding. He's got just under a sub-2 ERA on the road. That's better than Clayton Kershaw since 2012. But all of a sudden, Duffy just seems to not have the right stuff. And even the outs that he got in the game against the Rangers so far they've almost been home runs. He's almost surrendered more than 4 runs. It's been frustrating to watch him his last 2 starts. This one's no exception. And the problem it now becomes you just have to sacrifice him and leave him out there. He's going to get left out there because there's no one else you can put in there. That you need to get the bullpen some rest. So, Danny Duffy continues to be frustrating. I almost said Jeremy Guthrie, who I do want to address now and say I may have jumped the gun a little bit. I ate my words, and I admittedly ate my words. I got a little too impatient with Guthrie. Now, it's only 1 start, so I won't, say he's back to, peak performance, but it was an impressive start by him last week in a 6-2 victory. Now, that said, Chris Young looked impressive again in his most recent start. 6 innings, shutout, 3 hits, no earned runs. It was really impressive work by Chris Young. Luke Hoche looked really strong. So, I will say, we don't need to replace Jeremy Guthrie in the starting rotation, but it is nice to know that we have viable options in the back of that bullpen that can maybe come in and be a spot starter for this ball club, because it's going to be something that we need once we get into the later months of the season, when we are probably going to lose pitchers to injury. The reality is Major League Baseball, it's a long season. It's inevitable that someone's going to get hurt. So shifting gears away from the Royals and away from Kansas City, it's time to talk the big national news story. The news story that seems to be on the forefront of NFL fans' minds since February when it first became, or I guess January when it first became a big scandal, the deflate gate, as Rob Gronkowski so eloquently put it. Suspensions came down today from the league office. The NFL has suspended Super Bowl MVP Tom Brady the first 4 games of the 2015 season without pay. They fined the Patriots $1 million, and they've taken away 2 draft picks as punishment for deflating footballs used in the AFC title game. And the 2 equipment staffers have been suspended indefinitely, including the one who called himself the deflator. Do you think that this was the right punishment? Do you think that they got enough punishment? Do you think they got too much punishment? Tommy, what are your thoughts on the punishment of the Patriots and Tom Brady?
You know, I have mixed feelings on it because I think overall I think it's a little too much. But I personally, I never thought it was that big of an offense. Like, that event in itself, I don't think was that big of an offense. I think a lot of this punishment is coming more from this is the second time the Patriots have been caught doing something very sketch like this. You know, they had Spygate, 6-7 years ago, whenever that was.
Right.
And that was a serious offense. Taping practices for another team.
Now, that said, that was the first year that rule was ever in effect. So it wasn't like that was banned before the Spygate. People tend to forget that. History has I did not know people that. Historically have a selective memory about that. I'm usually on the side of the defense of the Patriots. That was the first year that those rules were in effect about taping practices. So in that effect, I don't look at them as being general cheaters. The problem and the issue that I have is you raise the question, how long has Tom Brady been doing this? And I think that the cover-up in this situation was worse than the lie. I think Tom Brady would have gotten off a lot more scot-free, maybe not from a punishment standpoint, but from a public perception standpoint, if he had just said, look, yeah, I tell my equipment managers to deflate the balls a little bit less than the allowed PSI. Because the amount, it's really, the discrepancy, it's not noticeable. You can't really tell. But for me, that's the way I like to feel it and like to grip it. And I bet he should have said, go around to the other quarterbacks around the league, test, do the pressure test on theirs. I guarantee I'm not the only one, because I'm willing to bet a lot that he's not the only person that does this in games. It tells their equipment manager, hey, look, take a little bit out of it. I like him a little bit, you know, I like to be able to grip it a little bit more. I mean, there's quarterbacks who get the balls before the games, who can sand them down, who can apply stuff to them. And it's essentially almost like if you admit it in that situation, it's like the Jerry Rice thing where he said, yeah, I used stick 'em after they banned it. I used a little bit of it. You mean you try and get that competitive edge. But again, he tried to cover it up. He went in front of the national media and said, I don't know anything about it. You know, I don't know anything about, you know, equipment managers deflating balls. I don't know anything about it. Again, the cover-up becomes worse than the lie itself. The cover-up becomes worse than the offense. And I think that he should have admitted to it right away and said, look, yeah, I did it. I'm not going to do it anymore. I realized that I cheated. You know, players try to get a competitive edge all the time. You know, altering equipment to your advantage, people do it all the time. Basketball players have that stuff they rub their feet on before games to get more traction on their shoes. Baseball players use pine tar. I mean, you don't see people up freaking out saying that players should be suspended for a quarter of the season just because they apply pine tar to their hat or to their glove. And that happens. Players get suspended for it. But I think that in this case, because he tried to cover it up, again, I'll reiterate, because he tried to cover it up, because he lied, is the reason why he's getting such a stiff punishment.
So would you say that Tom Brady is more at fault in this issue than the Patriots are as a whole organization?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, see, that's what – because I was trying to say that when I thought the punishment was kind of mixed, because the 4 games seems pretty fair for him. It seems like it was mostly his doing. And so the Patriots losing 2 draft picks, including their first round one.
Yeah, first round.
Those are valuable.
That's a big pick.
And the $1 million is probably not that big of a deal.
Yeah.
But, well, that's – it's a big deal to most people, but to an NFL team, I don't think it's that big of a deal. But the 2 draft picks are very valuable, and I think that was – maybe you could have taken one from them. Definitely not the first round. The first round seems way too much.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I think they overstepped in terms of punishing the organization as a whole.
Yeah, I mean, the $1 million is pocket change. And the fourth-round pick – I think it's a fourth-round pick in 2017. Not going to make that much of a difference. But a first-round pick next year, it's a big deal, especially if those 4 games come to have a heavy impact – on that team. I mean, you're going to have Jimmy Garoppolo, you know, a second-round pick last year out of Eastern Illinois. He's going to be the starter for those first four. I mean, you presume that he will be because they traded away Ryan Mallett last year to the Texans. So you have to assume that they're going to have a second-year quarterback with no game experience going in there to play. He's thrown 27 NFL passes in his NFL career, which is one touchdown. But that's not a significant amount of experience. So this may have major implications for the Patriots' future moving forward, a future that sooner than later, will be without Tom Brady because he's getting up there. He's almost 40. You know, his career's winding down. Not a great way to finish if you're him. At the end of the day, he goes home to hundreds of millions of dollars, and he goes home to a beautiful model wife. So at the end of the day, I don't think he's suffering too much.
It's with these professional athletes and their beautiful wives.
Hey, he hit the jackpot with Giselle. Good for you, Tom. You know, but as a competitor, it's got to hurt a little bit. It's got to sting to have everyone think of you as a cheater. His entire career is tainted now moving forward in the eyes of a lot of people. I don't think he cheated his entire career. I think this is a contained incident. But I also think that there are players that deflate balls all over the place. I don't think it's just isolated to him. But because it happened on such a big stage, in such a big game, it was against the Colts. And in fact, the Colts weren't even the ones that reported it in the first place. The Ravens were the ones who brought it to the attention of the league, saying, look, these balls felt a little deflated. So I'm glad they've come down with the punishment. I'm glad we didn't have to wait until later in the summer to figure out what they were going to do, how they were going to react, and have people continue to talk about it. But, you know, there's no sugarcoating it. Tom Brady cheated. He's getting punished for it. And the Patriots are also suffering as a result.
I think the worst part of all this now that just came out is all the media storm that's going to come in the next couple of days about, was the Super Bowl tainted? Is Tom Brady a career cheater? Like you were saying, he's probably not. I wouldn't consider the Super Bowl tainted either. Because I mean, the Patriots won that AFC Championship game by three touchdowns.
Right, that didn't make a difference. They could have been playing with a bowling ball and they would have won that game. But I don't think the Super Bowl was tainted.
No,
because you have to make you have to imagine that there were league officials checking every single ball in that stadium, not even the ones that were being used on the field for a proper, you know, pressure.
Well, I don't think it tainted. I didn't mean tainted as in they were deflating the balls for that one. I think,
but they shouldn't have been there in the first
place. Yeah, I think that's what people would think that, which I don't think that's, I don't think the deflated balls made a difference at all.
Yeah. You know, and I just want this story to go away.
I do too.
You know, I've very much felt, you know, Rob Gronkowski kind of spoke from his heart about the whole thing, and I actually kind of agreed with him a lot. You know, all everyone wants to talk about is the deflate gate. They're not talking about the kids. And then the only thing you can deflate is D's nuts. That was a great that was a great speech by Rob Gronkowski, and he's now one of my personal sports idols. So enough about Deflategate, because we are tired of hearing about it, and I'm sure listeners are as well. But again, Tom Brady punished by being suspended 4 games for the start of the 2015 season. Moving on into arguably one of the most exciting weekends of NBA basketball all season. Actually, no, it is. It has been the most. It was the most exciting weekend of NBA basketball all season. A lot of game winners recently. It's been a lot of fun to watch, and it's almost as entertaining as the NCAA tournament is. And anyone who says NBA basketball isn't fun to watch apparently has not been tuning in the last couple of days. It all started on Friday night. Bulls-Cavs tied 96-96, 3 seconds remaining. The Bulls inbound the ball to Derrick Rose. And Derrick Rose, reminiscent of his airness, Michael Jordan, sinks a game winner to defeat the Cavaliers. Now, it was a bank shot. It was a bank in three to win the game. So some are saying it was a lucky shot. Others say, and most of the people in Chicago say, clutch, classic Derrick Rose. So we're going to play a little game of luck or clutch, because there were 3 game winners this weekend, which could be classified as either luck or clutch. So let's start with the first game winner. Derrick Rose, game winner against the Cavs. Tommy, luck or clutch?
I think I'm going to lean towards clutch this one. I don't really like the bank in three, because I don't think anyone tries to do it. But there's definitely some skill to it. Like, he got himself a good look, a good shot. You know, obviously put a little too much on it, but he banked it in. And, I mean, not everyone can do that. I'm going to go with luck, but
You're going to go with clutch or luck?
Luck. Okay. I'm going to go with luck. Sorry. Kind of went both ways. I will go with luck, though.
I will side with you. I think it was a lucky shot. I'm not denying Derrick Rose's talent, because he's hit a lot of really important shots in the playoffs thus far. He's made a lot of big plays down the stretch. But when you fade away and bank in a three over Tristan Thompson in the final seconds, you got to go with luck on that one. So, Brody, what are your thoughts on the shot?
You know, I'll just be the devil's advocate here, and I'll say that it was a clutch shot, because look at the way he reacts after that. He knew that was going to go in.
Yeah, he did.
True.
And he didn't seem to care that much that he made that
not
shot.
Not at all.
That was what I think the kids call swag after that shot. He just stood there straight-faced and waited for Joakim Noah to pick him up and celebrate with the rest of his teammates.
I don't know how someone can do that, how you make that shot and just stay there stone-faced. I mean, me and Brody were watching it on TV, and I'm not even a big NBA fan. I'm not a huge Bulls fan, and he hits it, and I'm running around our living room screaming.
It was absolutely insane. So not by unanimous decision, but 2-3, that shot was luck. Saturday afternoon, you've got Wizards versus the Atlanta Hawks. Series tied at 1-1. The truth, Paul Pierce banks in a shot from the elbow at the buzzer to give the Wizards the game and a 2-1 lead. After the game, the reporter comes up to Paul Pierce and said, "Did you call bank?" And Paul Pierce responds, in classic Paul Pierce fashion, I called game. So, Paul Pierce, Wizards, Hawks, luck or clutch? Brody, go.
I'm going with the luck. I watched it several times, and I just cannot believe how he does it over, I believe, three defenders, all in his face, fadeaway shot, with time going off. Just the skill that he has, but that was just luck.
That was luck.
All right. Understandable. As a Rock Chalk faithful, as a Jayhawk fan, as a diehard Kansas crazy, I'm going to have to give love to my boy Paul Pierce. The truth speaks the truth. He called game. He was clutch. That shot right there by number 34, Paul Pierce, was clutch. Tommy, you are the tiebreaker. You have to declare luck or clutch on Paul Pierce's shot against the Hawks.
I hate to go against Brody again, but I'm going to go with clutch. I really thought that, I mean, I'm more believable on a bank on an elbow shot like that, and he is the truth.
Yes. So, all right. So, Rose, luck. Pierce, clutch. The final game winner that happened Sunday afternoon yesterday. Bulls, Cavs tied again at the end of the game. Who do you give the ball to in that situation with them? When the Cavs had the ball, do you give it to Kyrie Irving? Do you drop a play for Kyrie Irving?
Do you try and call a timeout?
Do you try and call a timeout like David Blatt did with no timeouts left? No, you don't do any of those things. You give the ball to the king. You give the ball to LeBron James, who catches the ball in the corner, drains a perfect three. No bank. No fade away. Well, it's kind of fade, but no crazy arch, no crazy bounce, no nothing. Drains a three at the end of regulation to give the Cavaliers the victory. Tommy, luck or clutch in that situation?
I think that one was definitely clutch. I don't think there's any way around it. LeBron's response after the game, I mean, when we found out that they didn't want to give him the ball, and he scratched that play and was like, I'm going to win it or we're going to go to overtime.
Yep. That is the attitude of a champion. That is an attitude of a guy who's been there before. That is the attitude of a guy who is going to do whatever it takes to help his team win. And LeBron knew in that moment that he was the only one that could win that game for the Cavaliers. I think I can speak for Brody when I say we're going to unanimously agree that that shot was clutch. The manner in which it happened, the fact that he said, I scratched that David Blatt play. I scratched it. We were going to run that. The ball was going into LeBron James' hands. LeBron James was supposed to inbound the ball. And he said, no, not doing that.
Do you think when they came out of that huddle and they come up, they now had the new play with LeBron taking the shot, David Blatt was like shaking his head, like, not giving the ball to LeBron. What was I thinking?
Yeah, I think that's what you have to. I mean, I think at that point, you've got to just be like, why wouldn't I give the ball to my best player? Yeah. Now, Kyrie Irving is the best shooter on the floor in that situation. Kyrie Irving or J.R. Smith, you know, you can drop a decoy play for Kyrie and get the ball to JR. I can see where David Blatt's mind was thinking there because LeBron James is the best passer, so he's going to be able to find the guy that's open in that scenario. But he's the best player in the game for a reason. He's the best player, arguably, ever for that reason. And yeah, I said it. LeBron James is one of the greatest players to ever play the game of basketball. He made a big play last night. He gave the Cavaliers an opportunity to go back to Cleveland and try and get back home court. The Cavaliers are playing great basketball right now without Kevin Love, who's been an important piece for that team this season. His numbers are down, but he's still an important piece for that team. And LeBron James put the team on his back, and he said, scratch that, I got this.
Yeah, you know, he essentially saved the series because, you know, they fall down 3-1 if he doesn't hit that and they lose in overtime, they're down 3-1. Right. You don't really come back from that. It's difficult for it to happen.
Especially when there's two more games left in Chicago, or there's, you know, another game left in Chicago.
But now it's tied 2-2, and I think the next one's
in Cleveland. The next game will be in Cleveland, game 6 will be in Chicago, and then if there is a game 7, it'll be back in
Cleveland. So potentially they could go up 3-2 and then have a chance to win it either in Chicago or back home in Cleveland. So I think the momentum is very much shifted in favor of the Cavaliers.
Yeah. So it's been an exciting, exciting playoff. Tonight, you know, by the time you listen to this, you will have already seen the results of Atlanta, Washington, and Golden State, Memphis. It looks like the Hawks, who are up 8 on the Wizards right now, will win over the Wizards, but, you know, 6 minutes left in an NBA basketball game, you can never say never. And then the Warriors face off against the Memphis Grizzlies tonight. I'm going to go ahead and assume that the Warriors rebound tonight and defeat the Memphis Grizzlies. I still think the Warriors are the best team in this playoff, in these playoffs right now. They've gone a little cold recently, and that happens when you're when you're a team that relies so heavily on shooting. But it's been just a fun playoffs to watch so far between the Spurs and Clippers series in round one, and now these Atlanta, Washington, Chicago, Cleveland series. It almost seems like we don't deserve this good of basketball right now. It almost seems like we're getting spoiled with the quality of NBA basketball right now. So we're going to go ahead and move to the end of the show. We're going to close it out with our best and worst of the week segment. We'll start with the worst of the week because you never want to end on the worst of the week. We'll end on the best of the week. Worst of the week, report this on Sunday about New Jersey Governor Chris Christie, who we've seen recently hanging out with Jerry Jones in the suite at Cowboys Stadium. Recently found out that he spent over $82,000 in taxpayer money on concession stand items at MetLife Stadium, where he was watching the New York Giants play during the 2010 and 2011 seasons. That's $82,000 over two seasons. That's $41,000 a season in just food, in concession stand food, over 2 years. You split that amongst eight home games, you're spending $5,000 in concessions at every single home game, which seems a little obscene. Even if you're buying food for other people, $5,000 a home game on concession stand items seems a little obscene. Now, Chris Christie, since 2011, has had his stomach stapled. He's gotten the surgeries or whatever. He's lost a lot of weight. But that seems a little ludicrous.
Stadium food is not cheap. For $5,000, that might be like 10 beers.
Okay, all right. Now,
especially in New York.
Okay, I understand your point that we have long lamented over the prices of stadium food. But even if beers were $50, Tommy, he would have had to have got 100 beers in one game just to hit the 5,000 bill every single week. I don't care how high prices are in New York. I don't care how high prices are at NFL stadiums. You should never spend, on average, $5,000 per game on concession stand food.
Okay, maybe that was a stretch, but I think the bigger problem here is he's spending money that doesn't necessarily belong to him.
Right. And, you know, they say he gets $95,000 in expense advances annually. So they give him money to be able to pay for this stuff. But if you're spending almost half of that expense money at a football game, that's probably not a good thing. You expend those on campaign trips and when you go to visit other constituents in surrounding areas of New Jersey. Not like you got to travel a long way to get around to New Jersey because it is New Jersey. But it seems a little ludicrous. Brody, you're an eater yourself. What are your thoughts on $5,000 in expenditures at a single football game?
I mean, that had to be one hell of a party.
Yes. Yeah, but should the governor of New Jersey be having a big party every single Sunday during the NFL season?
You know, I don't know. Maybe once a week, but definitely not every single week.
Yeah.
That's
like what you spend on a Super Bowl party or something like that. You know, and I like Chris Christie. I think he's affable. I like when he goes on Jimmy Fallon, and I think that he would make a good potential presidential candidate. But after that whole bridge scandal and now this and how he's abrasive with media and other people, this just doesn't bode well for Christie, especially when just the casual fan can go on Bleacher Report and find this staggering concession stand bill. I mean, can you imagine spending $82,000 in 2 years at Arrowhead Stadium? I mean, we should be in like the High Rollers suite or whatever.
I say for $82,000, I want season tickets in the Hunts suite up there, that mansion they got hiding in the stadium.
Exactly. So enough about Chris Christie and the worst of the week. Let's go on to the best of the week. It's wedding season right now. We're just in the beginning of the spring and summer months. And love is in the air. Weddings are in full swing. And there was a couple who got married recently, Robert Saban, who, ironically enough, last name Saban, is an Alabama fan, and his bride, Amanda Perriman, they tied the knot. Both went to SEC schools. One went to Alabama, one went to Florida. So you'd have to imagine things get pretty awkward during football season, and probably during basketball season too, although Alabama traditionally isn't a great basketball school. So they tied the knot. And, you know, his wife, you know, did a nice thing for him for his groom's cake. I guess she didn't, but Saban decided for his groom cake, he was going to have a cake with an Alabama and the mascot, the elephant, with Nick Saban riding it, holding the national championship trophy with Bryant-Denny Stadium as the icing below. So I'm sure that his wife, Amanda, wasn't thrilled when she learned that this cake was going to be created. So Amanda cooked up a little prank of her own for her husband, and she had the bakers dye the inside of the cake blue and orange, the Florida colors, so that when he cut into his groom's cake, da-da-da-da, Florida Gator colors on the inside. What are your thoughts on this, Tommy?
I think she got him good.
I think she did too. You know, he clearly took some liberties with this cake. I'm sure that she wasn't thrilled about it in the first place.
See, if you've seen a picture of this cake, it is very excessive.
It's excessive.
Nick Saban riding an elephant.
Yeah, a giant elephant. The elephant's almost as big as the cake itself. You know, props to the baker who did this. But, gosh, this is just hilarious. And it's a great, fun way to kick off your marriage, too.
Yeah.
You know, these two crazy kids are young and in love. And they're already pulling pranks on each other at their wedding. So that's our best of the week. Brody, what are your thoughts on the cake?
Congratulations.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
Props to the baker. You're the real MVP.
Yeah, props to the baker. You're the real MVP. But congratulations to Robert Saban and Amanda Pearman on their recent nuptials. We don't know them personally.
So
but
what are the chances of that here?
Yeah, probably not likely, but it's a great story. And you know. When weddings are in season, it's nice to talk about love a little bit. Right, Tommy?
Yeah, you said that really weird. He's making strong eye contact with me.
All you need is love, right, Tommy?
Yeah, sure.
Well, that wraps up this week of the Built on the Border podcast. We really enjoyed bringing this show to you once again for another week. As always, if you'd like to hit us up via email, you can reach us at builtontheborder@gmail.com. You can interact with us on Twitter, just use the search term Built on the Border, or find us by our Twitter handle at BorderKC. We always want your input, your thoughts, your opinions on what we can do to improve this show and what we can do to improve our website as well, because we want to know. This is for the fan. We want the fans to be involved. So thanks again for listening. As we conclude the show today, we're going to play you guys out with a new song by country artist Chris Stapleton. He released his debut album on May 4th. And we're going to play the first song off that album called Traveler. You know, we figured country music, it's the right time to start playing it. It's May. We're going to get into the summer months soon. And what better to listen to when it's summertime than a little bit of country music. So for the rest of the Built on the Border crew, I'm Tommy Randolph. We'll see you guys next week. Have a great one out there, and peace.
I see the sunrise creeping in. Everything changes like the desert wind. Here she comes, and then she's gone again. Sound just like the rubber turning on.